It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Shannon Bream.
I'm Tom Shalhoub.
I'm Maria Bartiromo, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, December 14th, 2022. I'm Lisa Brady. The founder of a now bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange has already defended himself publicly, but federal prosecutors aren't buying what he's selling.
You don't get to rob the bank and then say, well, I'm not guilty because I intended to return the money as soon as I was in better financial shape. You know, that's not a defense.
I'm Dave Anthony. He's the American in prison in Russia you may not have heard about. Mark Fogel. His case is similar to Brittany Griner's, but like Paul Whelan, he was not set free.
He's afraid of dying there. My mother's afraid he's going to die there. We're all afraid of that.
And I'm Paul Batura. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Once nicknamed the King of Crypto, Sam Bankman-Fried is now holding court in the Bahamas Department of Corrections, under indictment in the United States, accused of scheming to defraud investors in the now bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange he founded, FTX.
He preyed on his customers, the victims of this case, abusing the trust placed not only in his company, but in himself as the lead of that company.
Michael Driscoll is the assistant director in charge of the FBI in New York, where U.S. Attorney Damian Williams detailed an 8-count indictment yesterday, calling it one of the biggest financial frauds in American history.
We charge that from 2019 until earlier this year, Bankman-Fried and his co-conspirators stole billions of dollars from FTX customers. He used that money for his personal benefit, including to make personal investments and to cover expenses and debts of his hedge fund, Alameda Research.
In a separate civil complaint, the Securities and Exchange Commission also accuses Bankman-Fried of diverting funds without telling customers, then using Alameda as a personal piggy bank, describing it all as a house of cards built on a foundation of deception. The new court-appointed CEO of FTX, John Wray, was more blunt at a House hearing.
This is just plain old embezzlement.
Wray telling lawmakers the FTX collapse appears to stem from absolute concentration of control in the hands of a small group of people he calls grossly inexperienced and unsophisticated.
I've just never seen an utter lack of record keeping. Absolutely no internal controls whatsoever.
Bankman-Fried was also due to appear virtually at that hearing and was reportedly planning to tell lawmakers in so many words what he said in recent interviews, that he messed up but had never tried to commit fraud. But Bankman-Fried's testimony was preempted by his arrest Monday in the Bahamas, a magistrate judge denying bail at his first court appearance there yesterday, while a lawyer for Bankman-Fried says they're exploring all legal options.
Anytime you're dealing with financial fraud in the federal context and the numbers get to be 7, 8, 9, 10 digits long, that's very, very serious.
Andy McCarthy is a former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York and a Fox News contributor.
And when they add money laundering charges, that kind of turbo inflates the potential prison exposure. So they're extraordinarily serious for a 30-year-old guy. We're talking about, you know, someone who conceivably could spend the rest of his life in jail.
Now, Bankman-Fried has essentially said during interviews he didn't intend to commit any fraud. If that's true, how much could that help him?
Well, he can't be guilty unless he intended to commit fraud. So a jury would have to find at a certain, you know, whenever the trial takes place, that the government has proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he intended it. If he didn't intend it, that's a complete defense to the charges.
But how do you prove lack of intent, though, or is it more to do with convincing a jury there is reasonable doubt?
Well, you know, every case is different. In this case, I think the way prosecutors would go about it would be simply to say, here are the normal controls that are put in place to make sure that client money doesn't get diverted to the purposes of the person who on whose representations it was derived. There's evidently been a departure from very basic compliance and bookkeeping standards. And then what I imagine they would show is two things. One is laid out in the indictment, there are a number of bookkeeping tweaks that were done over time to conceal the fact that money was being diverted from FTX to Alameda, his other vehicle that he is said to have diverted everything to. So there, it's clear that they had a consciousness that that was a problem. And then there were other tweaks that were made over time as Alameda became more and more in hock to FTX and therefore more and more of a big problem for FTX's internal accounting. They took additional steps to conceal that fact. So it's very difficult if they're able to prove what they've alleged. And, you know, typically you wouldn't put that in an indictment unless you were confident you could prove it. It'd be very difficult to convince people that he didn't know or intend what happened. Now, people typically say Bernie Madoff said this, you know, that he didn't intend to defraud people. And what he meant by that was that it was always his intention to make people whole in the end. That is, like, he didn't intend to orchestrate a catastrophe. But of course, that's not the test. The test is, did you take other people's money for improper purposes, convert it to your own use, even if you intended at some point to make them whole? The crude analogy is kind of a bank robbery. You know, you don't get to rob the bank and then say, well, I'm not guilty because I intended to return the money as soon as I was in better financial shape. You know, that's not a defense.
Mm-hmm. The hedge fund Alameda, in a case like this, is that typically treated as a separate case? Would we expect to see, you know, more charges and more current or former officials in trouble over that, the commingling of funds and the way funds were diverted and the way investors' funds were used by Alameda? Or is it considered part of all, you know, the same case?
Yeah, I think it's all interrelated. And in fact, Lisa, if you look at the some of the news we got this afternoon was that in addition to the indictment and the complaint that was filed by the SEC, there's also been a civil complaint filed by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, in which I believe Alameda is named as a defendant along with FTX and Bankman-Fried. And I would expect two things here with respect to the indictment. One, you know, let's remember that we're in an early stage and they've obviously got a charging instrument in front of the Bahamian authorities in order to try to get him extradited. We shouldn't assume that the Justice Department is at the end of its investigation. It's probably closer to the beginning. And I'd be very surprised if we didn't at some point see superseding indictments, maybe more than one, in order to flesh out the charges and probably add additional charges. And then the other thing I would point out to people is there are at least three conspiracy counts in the indictment that the Justice Department filed, in which Bankman-Fried is the only named defendant. And I underscore that because under any, you know, it's black letter law, you can't conspire by yourself. You know, as they say in the criminal law biz, it takes two to tango. So if there's not a meeting of the minds between two people on a criminal end, then there's no conspiracy. And what that necessarily means is the Justice Department, if they indicted him for conspiracy, they have to think other people are also guilty of it. So I would expect that you're either going to see charges against other individuals in future indictments, or it's entirely possible that other people who were involved in this are already cooperating with the Justice Department, and maybe we'll see guilty pleas down the road.
Millions of dollars in political donations are also wrapped up in this case. Some lawmakers have questioned the timing of Bankman-Fried's arrest on Monday, which was on the eve of his scheduled testimony virtually appearing before a House committee. The federal prosecutor in New York said really the timing of the arrest was more about law enforcement and not anything else related to it. But what do you make of the timing of the arrest?
So what I suspect happened here is there has to be political concerns, or it's highly likely that there are. And the reason I say that is the millions in campaign contributions that you just mentioned, it's highly likely that if this hearing had happened today, there would have been a lot of spotlighting of the fact that Bankman-Fried has been identified publicly as the number two contributor to Democrats, second only to George Soros, and has reportedly given about $40 million in this last cycle. So we're talking about a scheme where what actually is alleged to have happened here is Bankman-Fried stole that money from investors and converted it to his own use, and in part used it to make campaign contributions. So you'd have this situation where the people whose money was stolen from them have very little prospect of getting it back. And in the meantime, millions of dollars have gone into the coffers of politicians. So I imagine that would have been very uncomfortable testimony to sit through. I should underscore, though, that, you know, Bankman-Fried says that he was an equal opportunity giver, that he gave money to Republicans, too. He claims that he gave just about as much money to both sides. So we'll have to see how that all plays out.
Is Bankman-Fried better off not going to trial in a case like this, do cases with this many charges from multiple entities, in this case, prosecutors and regulators, do they make deals in a situation like this?
Defendants who are guilty, generally speaking, are far better off pleading guilty than going to trial because the sentencing guidelines build in some breaks for people who admit their guilt and accept responsibility for their wrongdoing. And it's something that impresses both the Justice Department and the court for whom you're hoping to get leniency. Obviously, people who aren't guilty, going to trial is a much different scenario because that's the way that you can clear yourself and show the weaknesses in the government's case. But when a case is overwhelming, and we don't know at this early stage if that's going to be this case, but it certainly sounds that way because in these financial fraud cases, what you often get are lots of testimony from insiders and witnesses who have a motive to testify, especially if they're casting the blame on somebody else rather than on themselves. And then there's just truckloads of documents that are generally available to corroborate details of the fraud. And if that comes together in this case, like it comes together in a typical fraud case, and this does look like a very typical fraud case, then the case becomes overwhelming. And to my mind, you're much better off pleading guilty when you're clearly guilty than rolling the dice and going to trial. Because if you get convicted at trial and, you know, you've put the government through all of its phases and put the court through a trial, there's not much leniency on the other end of that.
How does any of this affect the FTX bankruptcy case? Does it make it easier or more difficult for investors to get any money back?
Well, whether they can get money back or not will be a function, number one, of how much money there is, you know, how much is available to be clawed back. And then, you know, obviously the testimony is very important in terms of what the provenance of the funds in FTX was and, you know, who knew what about what their business practices were, how badly people were defrauded. One of the big issues, for example, in the Bernie Madoff case, which was kind of a classic Ponzi scheme, was whether the people who were at the top of the scheme were, you know, there were accusations that some people who were involved in that were virtually co-conspirators, because what happens typically in a Ponzi type scheme is the people who get in early get their money back and make money, whereas the people at the end are left holding the bag. This kind of scheme actually looks more at the moment like one where there's not much money left. And that a lot of, you know, we're talking about $32 billion that disappeared. But one of the things you have to ask is how real was that in the first place? Like, was it really ever really worth anything close to $32 billion? So we're a long way at this stage from figuring that all out.
Andy McCarthy, former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York and Fox News contributor. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Paul Baturo with your Fox News commentary. Coming up,
Brittany Griner is upbeat, thankful, and hopeful. That's what the basketball star's agent says, as she goes through a reintegration program at an Army hospital in Texas, days after Griner was set free in Russia.
This is a day we've worked toward for a long time.
President Biden announced Griner's release from the White House.
After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances.
Griner was detained on drug charges in February for having cannabis vape cartridges in her luggage, convicted and sentenced to 9 years in prison, then swapped in a prisoner exchange for convicted Russian arms dealer Victor Boot. But Paul Whelan was not freed with her. An American detained since 2018 as an accused spy.
This was not a choice of which American to bring home. We brought home Trevor Reed when we had a chance early this year. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's. And while we have not yet succeeded in securing Paul's release, we are not giving up.
The president faced strong criticism from Republicans like Congressman Mark Green, who told Fox,
"It's a terrible message to send not only to the despots of the world who now know that they can get a trade if they just capture an American, but to the military, the United States military, who are saying, yeah, I can serve this country and the president will leave me and take the basketball player."
But left out of this entire discussion is Mark Fogel, an American teacher who's also in prison in Russia, arrested in August 2021 for possessing, like Brittany Griner, vape cartridges with hash oil and medical marijuana, given a 14-year prison sentence for those drugs. Unlike Griner and Paul Whelan, the U.S. government has never formally declared Fogel wrongfully detained.
I was disappointed that Mark wasn't on the plane. There's a lot of conflicting emotion.
Ann Fogel is Mark's sister.
I'm happy that Brittany Griner's home. I'm very sad that Mark was not on that plane.
There were members of Congress from Pennsylvania last week after the release of Griner who were on your side calling for your brother's release, that he be a priority for the U.S. government to try to also set free. Have those members, Guy Reschenthaler and Mike Kelly, what have they told you?
That they're essentially running into a wall. There was a resolution for information from the State Department that did not pass. They're running into the same information block that we are.
What is the reason that you're told by the State Department or the U.S. government that her case was wrongful detainment, but his is not?
The State Department has been a black box. I've had people at the State Department say, thanks to people like your brother, diplomatic families are able to go overseas together. We appreciate the work that your brother has done all of these years. It allows us to do our work. I mean, it's crazy. The former ambassador's son was a student of my brother's. You know, my brother is not an average person. He's not an average teacher. He is an extraordinary teacher. He's probably trained the whole next generation of diplomats.
So I don't understand the disconnect. That there's a disconnect. If he's so well revered within the State Department, why would they not consider him wrongfully detained? What do they say when you ask that?
They will not give an answer. I can't explain the level of frustration that our family's feeling.
So he's been in Russia for nearly a decade.
Correct. Well, he has been there for a decade. Mark is a history teacher, has been a history teacher for 35, 36 years now, almost exclusively in the international school system. So he has taught in Malaysia, in Colombia, in Venezuela, in Oman, Mexico. He's taught all over the world. This was their final stint. They wanted to be in a European country, and Russia filled the bill. The pay was good. The city was amazing. They enjoyed 9 phenomenal years there. Their kids matriculated through the Anglo-American school there. He was returning to Moscow to finish their 10th and final retirement year.
And while he was returning, he goes through customs at an airport. There's medical marijuana in his luggage, correct?
Correct. 17 grams of medical marijuana. And there had been a tip off, and he was met by airport security as soon as he came through.
When you say he was returning to Moscow, was he coming to Russia back from the United States?
Yes, he was coming back from the United States from Oakmont. He lives in Oakmont, Pennsylvania.
And that's the last time you saw him?
Yes, he had a 60th birthday party on July 28th, and on August 14th, he was detained. I think that he was probably fed some information that he desperately wanted to believe, because after three failed back surgeries, hip surgery, shoulder surgery, his chronic pain levels are a 24-hour-a-day job.
Oh, wow.
We produced a stack of medical records, probably 3 inches thick.
But they didn't care, and he was convicted in June of this year of drug trafficking. When your brother was sentenced, he was sent to where in Russia?
Well, I don't think they knew where to send him, to be honest with you. He can't work. I mean, I think that would probably kill him. They have sent him to not where the others went. They sent him to north of Moscow to the town of Rybinsk. They're not allowing him to work, which is interesting, because it must be pretty obvious to them that they can't.
Is this a penal colony, as they call it?
It is a penal colony. And he's allowed to use the phone now. He's allowed to receive one package every 3 months. And here's an interesting story. He received a package the other day that was full of rotten fruit. My brother is a real fruititarian.
Okay.
But it was filled with rotten fruit, and he was panic stricken because this was his one package for 3 months. So he took it to the main office, and they allowed him to refuse the package. And it was as if, like, the greatest, most extraordinary kindness was given. He was so touched that they allowed him to refuse the package.
Who sent him the fruit?
A friend of his in Moscow. It was chasing him. You know, he was in transition for 4 or 5 weeks. We had no track of him. No one heard from him. There was not a way to get any letters to him. So I guess this package was just floating around out there, but it finally made its way to Rybinsk, and it was it had all gone bad.
So he now will be able to get a package.
Hopefully he'll be able to get a package now.
Are you planning to send one?
We have contacts in Russia that handle some of this stuff for us.
Okay. What has he told you? I assume you have spoken to him on the phone now that he can talk.
Yeah.
What does he tell you?
Well, the sad thing is he really can't tell us much of anything. He did say that he was watching a bunch of older men having a snowball fight. So I'm sure that that's the kind of thing that the authorities would love him to tell people.
Sounds like fun.
Sounds like fun. He's having fun.
Yeah.
It's a one-way conversation for the most part. We're telling him what we're doing, which is also like, I don't really want to tell him that I've gone out skiing or that we had people over for a dinner party. So it makes it very difficult to have a conversation with him.
And he's got someone listening on the other end, so he can't talk about anything in real emotion or real information.
Right.
And how long can you speak to him?
For 10-minute segments.
Okay.
And it depends on if someone else is waiting in line for the phone.
All right. And does he, I was going to ask you, does he say the food's good? But what's he going to say? The food's terrible? The conditions are terrible? He's not going to say that.
He said about the food that it's that is being fed. It's primarily
he's being fed. Yeah.
Cabbage and potatoes.
Cabbage and potatoes.
Yeah.
Does he know that Brittany Griner came home?
Yes, he does.
What did he say?
He said, I'm trying to stay hopeful.
I mean, he has a 14-year sentence to serve.
Yeah.
He said he had his 60th birthday. Has he told you anything that he fears he's going to be there forever?
Of course. Of course. He's afraid of dying there. My mother's afraid he's going to die there. We're all afraid of that.
I can't even imagine how hard this must be.
Yeah, it's it's bad. It's certainly makes a lot of other problems pale in comparison.
What is next for you? What will you do next?
We are going to doggedly pursue the State Department until they give him the wrongful detainment classification. And after that, I don't know.
I assume you'll hope that there's another prisoner exchange.
Yeah, we surely do. Maybe, you know, maybe they'll bring him home with Paul Whelan.
Well, we certainly wish for better news for your family and that you can welcome Mark home soon. Ann Fogel, sister of Mark Fogel, who continues to be in prison in Russia, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me this time.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. Wildlife officials in Los Angeles nabbed the city's most famous mountain lion, accused of murdering a dog in the Hollywood Hills. The cougar's name is P22. He made a name for himself by roaming freeways, making a sprawling urban park his home and terrorizing local pets. Los Angeles wildlife officials tranquilized the big cat this week, hoping to get a closer look at him. They say P22 is a remarkably old cat for the wild, an estimated 12 years old, and his recent killing of that leashed dog may be a sign of distress. There were also reports he was hit by a car. Wildlife officials say most mountain lions live to be about 10 years old in the wild, but haven't said what might happen to P22 after his examination. P22 usually hunts deer and coyotes, but in November, the National Park Service confirmed the cougar attacked and killed a Chihuahua mix that was being walked on the narrow streets of the Hollywood Hills. He's also suspected of attacking another Chihuahua in the Silver Lake neighborhood this month. P22 was the face of a campaign to build a wildlife crossing over a Los Angeles area freeway to give big cats, coyotes, deer, and other wildlife a safe path into the nearby Santa Monica Mountains. J.P. Rose, policy director for the Center for Biological Diversity, said P22's distress in his old age, quote, underscores the need to proactively protect mountain lions and other wildlife by reconnecting the landscape. The bridge, which will stretch 200 feet over US 101, broke ground this year and is expected to be completed by early 2025. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Paul Batura.
What's on your mind?
Sometimes life just isn't fair. Gary Razor, age 83, was laid to rest last week in Durham, North Carolina. Services were held at the Clemens Funeral Home on Broad Street. Their motto is, service not measured by gold, but by the golden rule. Such a statement and sentiment could be said of Gary Razor, who passed away on November 30th from injuries sustained from a senseless attack inside a Home Depot store in nearby Hillsboro, North Carolina. It all started back on October 18th when Gary, who was employed by the home improvement giant, approached a hooded man shoplifting three Ryobi pressure washers. The thief didn't even break stride, forcefully shoving the clerk to the ground, causing him to bang his head on the concrete floor upon impact. Mr. Razor made a valiant recovery effort, but the extent of his injuries and age were just too much to overcome. Known as Mr. Gary inside the store, the Ohio native and Army veteran was the ideal go-to guy for home fix-it advice. Although he sold insurance after serving his country in the military, Gary spent the rest of his years in the construction business. He managed a condominium complex and was a longtime owner of a fencing company. You know, what happened to Gary is fallout from a culture that's lost its mooring. It's what happens when you disrespect life. It's what happens when families fall apart and when values are discarded. So say a prayer for Gary's wife, Yvonne, and the whole Razor family, and all those who have lost loved ones from violent crime this year. Their grief is heavy, unimaginable, really. You know, Gary lived a bold and courageous life. He served his country, his family, and his neighbors, and he didn't stop serving until the end. Gary Razor's life ended tragically, but the way he lived his life should still be an inspiration to us all. I'm Paul Buttrell.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.